Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you serious?
Hello, this is How to Kill an Hour. My name is Marcus Bronzy, joined by our Hugh Jackman lookalike.
Producer Bill.
You were looking over your shoulder like, Hugh Jackman? What are you talking about? Huge and jacked, man. We like to kick off every single show. Before we get into our guest today, we have James Haskell talking about how we've been killing some time recently. Billy, how have you been killing time recently?
How have I been killing some time?
Clean version, please, sir. No naughty ones. All right, mate. TMI.
So I've been playing a bit of Uncharted 3.
You've been loving the retro games recently, haven't you? You've been loving turning back the clocks. Nothing wrong with that, Billy, because great game. But what drew you towards Uncharted 3?
Because I had an Xbox for quite a while, and I'll probably get the new Xbox at some point as well as the PlayStation. But
all right, money bags.
I missed out on. We'll come back to that actually. I missed out on Uncharted because I didn't have a PlayStation. I've completed the first two, and I've just started the third one, and I'm really enjoying the third one. So, and then the fourth one will be after that. So, it's a good movie, yeah. A good game. Sorry, and it's being made into a movie. The guy who plays Spider-Man.
Tom Holland. Isn't it? Aren't they just great stories, though? That's what I mean. Like, with what PlayStation did with those exclusives is they made sure that they were story-heavy games. So whilst you got a game on one side, which is like Among Us, where it's all about just playing around and being like sus and all that sort of stuff, yeah. This is like you're a movie, innit? You are the action hero, yeah. Right?
I mean, as I've grown older, I don't know what it is, but as I've grown older, I've kind of gravitated towards more single player games as well. Mm. Like I remember we've spoken about Spider-Man. That was a great game, single player game. I'm just enjoying single player games. Days Gone, I completed that. That was good fun. I just like playing games that are movie like that. Cyberpunk. I don't want to get involved in that at some point. Yeah. That's going to be a long, long, long game.
You've been smashing through them. What's your key to getting through a game? Do you do like big blocks where you just punch through the game, or do you take your time and plod around?
It depends. Like a big game like Cyberpunk or Final Fantasy, that game I tend to take my time with. Where you take everything in. Other games that are maybe Spider-Man, I just like to go from mission to mission to mission rather than explore New York. As good as it is, I'd like to just do the movie/game.
Yeah, do the main challenges. See, I'm kind of the same as you, but with Spider-Man, I do like to go around and do the little challenges because it means that you get upgrades. Do you know what I mean? I think if I didn't need to do those to kind of unlock extra bits of my like skill tree and stuff, I probably wouldn't. But because I want to have all of the power, then that's why I like kind of make sure I do it. Interesting though, man. Uncharted 3. I forget where we're at in the story with Uncharted 3. What's happening with Nathan Drake?
I think Uncharted 3, I think he's going back. So you play young Nathan at the beginning. Yeah. You see how he became who he is.
How he became the man he is. We should get that guy that does that voice on the show, shouldn't we? How he became.
Oh. In a
summer. That's terrible. In a summer. Coming to cinemas near you. Anyway, right. How have I been killing time recently? A couple of ways, Bill. DJI dropped the OM4. OM4. Yeah, it's a foldable stabilizer designed to complement your smartphone, allowing you to use recordings, allowing you to record straight away. Basically, what you do is you clip your phone onto it and it gives you smooth footage, right? That's what it does. That's what the whole basis of this product is. But as we're at the fourth iteration now, this gimbal has got a load of extra things in it. One of the cool things about the OM4 build is that it's got a magnetic design. So you get this little clip that goes around your phone and you can just clip it onto the OM4 or take it off. One of the things that is frustrating with a gimbal is sometimes you just want to have your phone and use your phone as your phone and clap it onto the gimbal real quick. The OM4 with the magnetic connection really helps you do that. And you can leave, I think you can just have a clip that goes around your phone, or if you want to, you can actually stick the metallic bit to your phone as well with a ring holder. Obviously, because I was using it and, you know, we're just using it from DJI and sending it back, I use the magnetic phone clamp which went around it, which meant I could have my phone and then just slap it onto it nice and easy. It's got loads of intelligent modes via its app where you can actually track people, faces and movement, which gives really nice footage when there's movement around but you're tracking a person. It's called Active Track 3.0. pretty cool. It's also got a story mode where you can film a few clips and it puts them together with music, which is, I guess it's all right, you know, but, you know, I like it. But, you know, for me, really, I kind of like to just shoot stuff and edit it together afterwards. But one of the coolest things it's got is this thing called dynamic zoom. Now, the best way of me explaining it, Bill, is there's a scene in Jaws, right, where the camera zooms into one of our characters. I can't remember his name. Let me remember. Jaws, camera zooms... I'm not Googling it. Camera zoom scene. I promise I'm not. But if you Google camera zoom scene, it's a dolly zoom that they use. I can't remember the characters. But basically what you do is, to do it in real life, it's really tricky. You have to zoom out whilst pushing the camera towards the person. And it gives this really cool effect where the person that's in focus stays the same size, but all of the background behind them moves in this weird way. And you can do that with the OM4 basically digitally. It will lock onto someone's face. And as you move towards them, it will zoom out or zoom in as well. Really cool dramatic effect, which I messed around with. In fact, I did some good play arounds that I'll pop up on my social medias as well. It's also got Clone Me Pano, where you can do like panoramics where you're in one position, where it'll take a few pictures of you and make you look like you're in three places at once, which is awesome. And it's also got gesture control as well, where you can actually take a selfie with a group of people by doing certain movements and use it hands-free too as well, which is pretty cool. I mean, what they've done here with the OM4 is they've not, apart from like the special dynamic zoom that they've got, they've not made it so much full of packed full of new features. They've just made it easier to use. I feel like it tracks better. It's a smoother experience. It charges quickly. It's just a simple way of having a gimbal on your phone. And now with the power of the iPhone 12 Pro and the Pro Max, I dare to say this, you could have, I'm not going to say cinema quality because I'm not disrespecting people that have got their red cams and expensive cams. You've got really high quality footage in your pocket. Stabilized, looking good. There we go. I realize I just ranted at you, Billy, about it. But yeah, so we tried it out. Thumbs up from me. I really like it if you want to stabilize your footage, man. Good for days out and shooting friends. And also if you want to get into like doing YouTube and vlogging and stuff like that.
Sounds like a decent, like a very powerful piece of equipment. It doesn't, I'm just looking online, it doesn't seem too expensive either. It's rather kind on your wallet.
Yeah, I mean, how much is it going for now, Billy boy?
The OM4 is £140.
There,
well,
you go.
139 to be exact.
So you can stabilize your footage even more so than you can with your phone. And I mean, if you're looking for a micro setup and you already have a phone and you want to vlog, there you go. No special cameras needed, no nothing. You've got that. And you know, you can put it on a stand. It can do time lapses and stuff like that as well. It's decent. It's pretty cool, man. The other way I've been killing time as well, Billy boy, is speaking of iPhone stuff, right? This is a setup, really. This is less of the full review, but we got our hands on the iPad Pro a little while back. And the reason we haven't spoken about it on the show is because after looking at the specs of it, Bill and I realized that it's extremely powerful, isn't it, Bill? Like,
yeah,
really powerful. And we also kind of looked at what its capabilities are. And I feel like because this new iPad Pro has got a trackpad on it and a keyboard that you get with the case, you can actually kind of use it. You can connect a Bluetooth mouse to it as well, which is what we'll be discussing in the future. I feel like we're in a position now where we can actually have the real life conversation of MacBook Pro or iPad Pro. How would each one differ in performance for day to day? Now, I'll be honest with you and the listener, Bill, is it fair to say actually that all of our content that we create requires the use of a MacBook Pro every day? right?
Yeah, I mean, like video editing, audio editing, Photoshop, and general text work.
Exactly. And I'm a fan of Apple. Like, that's not anything I'm trying to hide. I'm a big fan of their products and their ecosystem. I'm well in it. But can an iPad Pro perform as well as, or maybe even outperform, a MacBook Pro in certain areas if we try and use it instead of a MacBook Pro? And that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be swapping my iPad Pro out for the MacBook Pro, and I'm going to be purely trying to use it to create all of my content for a certain amount of time. And I'd like to share the findings with you, because I think it's a real life conversation. Now, when you look at the price point, you are looking at laptop costs for the iPad Pro. So can it do everything a MacBook can do? Or can it do things better? Or where are its limits? I think we can all kind of imagine where some of the limits are, but I really want to explore that. And we'll be talking about that in future shows. You know, can you record a podcast with an iPad Pro? Can you edit multicam footage? You know, that kind of stuff, Bill. So we'll really be exploring that over the next few weeks. So once we've got all of that content together, it'll be really good having that conversation with you on the pod, man.
Cool. I look forward to hearing and seeing more.
Cheers. Now, going from one pro to another pro, pro content to, or shall we say, pro content creation machine to a pro athlete. James Haskell is joining us on How to Kill an Hour. James has been on the show a few times before. He's even reviewed some tech with us. So he's not going to be doing that with us today. We're going to be talking about his new book. But before Haskell and I discuss that, I think it's only right we ask him for what his lockdown lowdown is.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mate, well, first of all, I was feeling good about myself, but when I have seen the depth in your lid, that is unbelievable. You are channeling some inner kid and play vibes. You look like a younger gentleman off a sort of Nickelodeon show circa 15 years ago. Oi, the Fresh Prince, you're pulling up in the cab, you know, I smell you later, or you've been combing that out. Oi, if I asked you what you've been doing in lockdown, that motherfucking afro thing that you're growing is what you've been doing. Because that has got, I'm so jealous that if I ran a comb through this, it would just peel off. Look at it.
I'll tell you what, I'm working for a lot now. You're looking a little bit thinner on the top there, James, man. Mate, I'll tell you what, do you want me to lend you a bit? I'll lend you a bit if you want.
The thing is, the worst thing is, it actually looks like the top of a microphone cover like in front of you. I reckon at night, you unclip that and you put it on a head. Because right. I'd roll that, unclip that and send it to me in the post.
All right, I know this is going to make bad podcasting, but I'm going to send James a link to an Instagram post of mine, yeah? And he's going to see what I look like after I get a haircut where I ask my barber to keep it real, real round for me. Let me get this link and send this to you. Real round.
Oh, mate, everything I do, whenever I go to my barber, I just literally go, mate, and he goes, what do you need? And I was like, skull fade. And we just skull fade this in real tight. Or we thin this out, we spread it, we glue it down, and then we're in.
I hope we have a link here. I'll send James a picture.
Mate, this is unbelievable. See, but I accept content. Yeah. Oh, it says, sorry, this page isn't available anymore.
Is it not? Oh, God. Too damn sexy for the gram, yeah?
Imagine that. Oi, you've actually... The link is so bad. They've taken it off the internet.
Oh,
I know. I'll have a look at another time. I'll tell you what, you have to screenshot it.
I'll screenshot it and I'll send it to him. All right, let's send James this. Right. Look at this. Live zoom in. If you're bored now, what you can do is just fast forward 30 seconds, all right? Right, here we go.
Don't worry, but because we're not a visual medium, we're only an audio medium in this.
Well, he might clip this depending on how much you rinse me, James. I don't know. There we go.
Oh, here we are. Shared file. Let's have a look at this. Ladies and gentlemen, let's check this out. It's just going to download. Hopefully it's not a dick shot because I do not need that.
That'd be great, isn't it? It's just a massive afro with my balls right below.
Just hit me up straight with that. Oh, wait, I'm already not feeling good about myself in comparison to the hair game. If you show me some massive piece, it's just going to rattle me. I'll have to go and have a lie down. It's still downloading. Hold on.
We've broken James's internet because I've sent him.
Oh, yeah, it's fine. Sorry, my wife's asked me. Right, here we are. It's loaded. Ooh, mate. That is unbelievable. It's like the hair was there originally and you bolted your head to it. That is unbelievable. Marcus, I tell you what, I don't know if you're married, you've got a partner, but you must be combing some treacles out of that.
David, tell you what.
Just
doesn't get any better than that. I channeled my inner 60s, 70s, 80s vibe and just combined it with the roundest afro. I feel like my barber was on his zenith that day. He was on his best.
Mate, there's not hair out of place. And I, have you ever seen the movie Semi Pro or something like that? That you look like a pimp from. I was watching. There's that movie like Dirty Harry. Early 70s, late 60s.
Yeah.
Fur coat, cane, Cadillac, mate, gold ready. With extenders, and you just bowling out like.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to keep this hair for next October, mate. I think you got my next Halloween outfit sorted, mate. I'm going to go out as a pimp.
You should just start calling me a cracker and everyone else a jive turkey. And I'll be like, this silly cracker. I'll be like, oh my God, where are we? We're transported back. You could, honestly, if you had four other members, you'd be the Jackson 5 in that mix.
Oh yeah, mate. Oh, I just got to get four mates to grow an afro, which I don't think they're going to do, you know.
I love that, but that is good. But look at it. I love it. The depth, the volume. Does it smell nice?
It smells delicious. When you get long, when you get longer hair, because obviously usually I've got a short hair, I'll just give it a little wash in the shower and that. Now, I wash, condition this. I usually put some product in it, so it's got some texture as well, yeah, but I ain't be bothered today, because I didn't...
Can I tell you something? I used to play with a teammate called Ashley Johnson, right? So if those listeners want to Google Ashley Johnson, and he had a very famous kind of a real big lid, long curly hair, played for Wasps, played for South Africa a couple of times, used to play for the Cheetahs, a lovely guy. Right. When he used to walk past you, if it was like a cartoon, there would just be these butterflies and flowers and smells just coming off him of the greatest smelling stuff. And do you know what it was? What? He used to condition Tresemme his lid every day, and it was the best smelling thing because it was so voluptuous. You would get tackled and you'd sort of land in this cushion, and for a minute you think you were lying into your, you know, cuddling into your missus. You were like, oh my God, this is just so relaxed. And they'd be like, oh shit, it's Ashley, guff, you know, get away. But mate, I Tresemme for the longer lid, apparently I'm not endorsed by them, it smells like heaven.
I'll give it a go. Maybe that's a good movie, like the predator that he was. You know, like how you have like the fish that have the tongue that looks like a worm to kind of attract other fish. That's what he did with his hair. He made you feel relaxed, put you at ease, and then beat the shit out of you on the rugby pitch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Then sickled you like a scythe on a farm. You were like, oh, Ashley, it's so good to see you. You were like, oh my God.
Anyway, James, how's lockdown treating you, mate? We spoke a little bit earlier in the year when we were like, oh, crazy, lockdown. Can't wait for a couple of months to go by where we all go back to normal. And look at us, end of 2020. How you feeling, mate?
How am I feeling? I am good. I would describe it slightly rudderless at the moment because everything I do was sort of public facing, as we talked about before. I think this lockdown... it's sort of not really a lockdown. I know I'm going to get criticised that. Is that everyone's sort of like, yeah, we're doing lockdown, but that's what I'm not really doing lockdown because, I mean, you know, I'm not COVID denier or anything else. I know people have lost their lives, and I'll check my privilege for a second. But I will say that, the government, you know, if you've got the Imperial University disagreeing with Oxford, who's disappearing with Cambridge, who's disappearing with the National Board, you know, thing of statistics, and nobody can understand actually what is happening. And, you know, we were going to lose 5,000 a day and now we're not, and losing less. Nobody can agree. Masks don't work. Masks do work. I'm sort of just getting on with my stuff. Since I spoke to you, my book came out, which was great. I've launched another podcast. I've sort of... you know, I love you guys and what you do and how to kill an hour, but I kind of get an ask like twice a day for some bizarre reason to come on people's podcasts. And I'm sort of like, I'm so bored of it. I'm doing My Good, the Bad, the Rugby. I launched another podcast with my wife called Couples Quarantine, which is all about relationships, sex, and everything, which is sort of causing some controversy and is putting it in the Daily Mail every time and getting my mother calling me up like, James, hello, it's not really true you've shagged 1,000 women, is it? And I'm like, no, mum, no, it's way more. But then the best bit about that is people then look at me and go, fuck, mate, he's lucky he's done one. Look at the state of him. He's ugly. So that's gone down. And then obviously I launched a podcast called What a Flanker, the podcast, and my autobiography was called What a Flanker.
Yeah.
That's been brilliant. That's me channeling my inner Joe Rogan. That's very much me kind of getting to actually be the interviewer, talking, not trying to be the funny guy. And I've had so many interesting people, you know, had Roman Kemp on talking about, you know, what it's like to be famous parents and kind of mad fan syndrome. You know, Dylan Hartley, former England captain, on his approach to leadership, because it's really unique. Jay Morton, you know, from SAS Who Dares Wins, about leadership and you know, being, you know, doing stuff to the point of excellence and what separates them. James Smith, you know, or being outspoken and controversial, mate. It's been so interesting. I sort of sit back in awe, really.
Yeah, man. Well, in short, you've been active as you ever are. Do you know what I mean? So, I don't think did we speak about the book on the last pod? I don't think we did, you know. But,
no.
Yeah. But what the flanker?
I got a dog.
You got a dog as well?
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know where he is. He's supposed to be somewhere.
I'm going to see if the dog, will the dog kind of nip in at some point and check you?
He will. He's only 5 months old. Basically, he was, I love this as well. I said, well, there's three things I've learned, right? I always like dogs, but I know dog people can be a little bit mad. Basically, you could say whatever you want on the internet, but if you say you've got a dog, all is forgiven. Like I post something controversial and everyone's like, oh, what a dickhead. I post a picture of a dog, 7,000 comments, all show me pictures of their dogs. Oh my God, our dog's great. You're like, okay, everyone calm down. But he was, and then the other thing is people go, oh, so I suppose you got him from a puppy farm, you know. And I went, and actually my thing is, no, actually get fucked. He was a rescue. He's 5 months old. They couldn't look after him. So I've got him, and we've only had him about a week and a half. And he is the loveliest thing. And my wife has gone from being like, oh, dog people, I never understand dogs, to being that dog person. Like I tried to wake it up the other night because it was like, we're going to bed. And I went, oi, Bertie, come and, come to bed. Right. And she went, no, shh, don't frighten him. She's like, Bertie, Bertie. And I was like, oh my God. I said, it's a dog. It's not a human being. It's not going to get upset. She's like, but you're going to get it too excited. I was like, Chloe, come on. But she's been amazing and it absolutely loves her. It's actually sitting on the sofa next to her now. I can see watching her.
Oh, but what is Bertie? What kind of dog is Bertie? What breed?
He is a fox red Labrador, which is a quite not a rare breed, but basically people are familiar, obviously, with the blonde Labradors. Then you get black Labradors. Then you get the chocolate brown Labradors, which are insane. And now you've got a fox red. So he has sort of, I mean, he's kind of the colouring of almost like a ridgeback, a Rhodesian ridgeback, kind of that sandier red colour. But mate, honestly, he is so good looking. And having him 5 months, we sort of missed a bit of the potty training stage, but I'm just taking him outside, training him, you know, trying to do stuff on the whistle. The only thing with it is that we're feeding him proper food. Like there's this really interesting thing called Rate My Dog Food, his website. Yeah. And obviously I'd never really taken, I mean, we talk about nutrition and stuff. We've talked about it with you before, my other books, bits and pieces. But you rate my dog food, and something like Pedigree Chum gets 12% on this dog food thing because it's like, and I allegedly, I'll be very careful not to get myself sued. But on the thing, it says something like, you know, 60% ash, 80% carbohydrate. So no wonder your dog goes completely mad because it's just eating sugar and gets fat. So this other stuff we've got is 97% is actually, it's raw food and it looks like something you'd want to eat. It's like high protein. So like 80% protein, 20% carbs, unbelievable nutrition. But the problem is there's also some natural snacks that smell like death. And the dog trainer, I think, was taking the piss. Got a lovely guy called Andy from Canine Club, and he gave Bertie a full cow's ear as a treat. Like they have, you know, you get like tendons and all these kind of beef tendons. Mate, a furry black cow's ear right, with the fur still on it, and he's been eating it for 2 days, and it's gone nowhere. And the smell on it, I basically took him out for a walk this morning and just threw it in the bin. Because the funny thing was, he runs through the house. He's only small, with this cow ear that's as big as his head, and he's so pleased to see you. And you're like gagging because you're like, this is so rank, but also so funny because there's a cat furry black cow ear lying on your floor. But mate, the stench of it. You know, and then he tried to offer me some beef testicles, and they also offered me as well, which I've got in the cupboard, a trachea, so the throat of a cow that they eat. And you're like, and the thing is, it's in the cupboard, and I want to sort of partly like get it out when people come round. But he, mate, he just eats this stuff, and he can't get enough of it. There's something in his bed. I mean, it's a visual thing, but this, I don't know what this is, but.
I want to be closer to the camera. Let's have a little look. Mate, what is that? It looks like the tendon of something. It's like a valve or something. Was it a tendon?
Yeah,
it could be a heart valve or something.
And the smell, it smells like utter death. He can't get enough of it. So if we're eating, because I can't buy dogs who sit up and like, you know, get in your face. You give him one of them, mate, you could be eating, you know, Nobu next. I mean, I don't know why a dog would like Nobu. He only eats at Michelin star restaurants. So whatever would be the ultimate dog thing,
yeah.
He sits and chew and he'll work through that for 4 hours and won't disturb you. I mean, so it's great. So you put up with the smell, but yeah, he's great.
Nice. I just realized, is your dog Ginger? Is that a cute way of calling your dog Ginger, by the way, the color of it, red? You got a ginge?
Well, I think you'll find that he's actually African Sunset. Oh, he's African Sunset. He's Autumn Splash.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, he's sort of Terry's Chocolate. No, he's not. I mean, actually, the thing is, though, we have to be very careful because obviously 2020 is kind of the year of finally, you know, actually raising some awareness around the continued sort of lack of progress around race and everything else. But as I've always said, I put funny comments up there. So when I put like, you know, what's it, there was a shoe, there was a picture of a shoe and a ginger person. I said, what's the difference between a ginger person and a shoe? One's got a soul and, right. And the thing is, you're like, ha ha, this is so funny. There's some irate gingers who are basically claiming that we are equally race, being equally racist to them. And I'm like, so it's a minefield now. So everybody loves laughing at ginger. But I remember reading on the radio some time ago that this basically woman who went to a bank and she had two kids and she had red hair and the kids didn't have red hair. And this bank clerk has basically done the work and gone, oh, you must be pleased that... they haven't followed. She went, what do you mean? She went, well, the kids aren't ginger. And she was like, and obviously she's gone and fully complained, called up like the ginger action relief hotline. The bloke's lost it. Rightly, the bloke, you can't say to somebody.
You don't tell a mum, I'm glad that your kids don't look like you. You don't say that regardless of what they look like. Yeah.
So it's, but it's a very controversial thing. So I've now had to rethink all my stuff actually. But then I'm wondering whether when the Australians keep calling us Poms, whether I need to possibly step in, but I don't think I need to water down what is actually some very serious and potentially, you know, finally some progressive stuff around race. But I'm sort of tentative about getting into the gingers, but no, he's not a ginger, but if he was, it would be lovely.
Sure. Cool. I've yet to see the dog. If it does jump into frame, I'll update you, listener, and let you know whether it is a ginger or not. It's still out there. It's an alleged ginger right now.
Is it a ginger nut? Is there a faint smell of urine on ginger nut biscuits? No, he's not. No.
Oh, well, good to see you're in good spirits, mate. Lockdown part two isn't crushing you at all. So yeah, the book, mate. I had to text you when I read it. I was like, fucking class, like quality book. Like, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass. It was a fun adventure into the world of James Haskell, of present and past as well, man. So what the flanker, like, when you decided to put this book together, did you kind of want to be careful about how you kind of angled it? Because I think everybody wants, the first thing they want out of a rugby player is give us the stories and that's it. And I feel like you gave us a good balance in the book, mate.
Look, it was one of those things. When you were a young player, do you ever think that you're going to write an autobiography? Do you think you're worthy of writing an autobiography? And I was never kind of labored under the assumption that I was going to have that career. And people will still say, you probably don't have a career deserving. But actually, I felt that I was able to straddle the line between giving the very best version of myself, having, you know, on reflection, without talking myself up, a pretty distinguished queer. Queer.
Yeah. Oh, that's chapter seven. That's chapter seven. Where did you get into that? Oh, great.
I actually have had a distinguished queer a few times, but a distinguished career, you know, but I also combined it by being myself, having a personality, traveling around the world, breaking some norms, being, you know, equally liked and equally hated it, and managing to do that and kind of doing it regardless of what other people would have said, and kind of, you know, not giving in when I could have done. And the idea behind the book was that once I'd started my, you know, there's an original podcast that I used to do before we came onto the Good, the Bad, and the Rugby. And both of those were equally really popular with, you know, one was called House of Rugby and now it was called the Good, the Bad, the Rugby. And both of them were equally popular with people. And I realized that people enjoyed my stories. And also, you know, way before that, I was asked to speak at a lot of dinners and had sort of a lot of kind of luck with that stuff. So when I wrote the book, I wanted it to be, to show the fun side, to show the adventures, to show the real positive stuff that I had in my career, but to tell the truth, to right a few wrongs, to essentially give my side. Because when you're a team player, you can't, sometimes you've got to do what's best for the team. Sometimes you've got to, you know, eat humble pie. And you can't, unfortunately, if you want to have a career in life, sometimes you've got to play the political game. And yes, every walk of life has mavericks, and everything we wouldn't have achieved some stuff if people hadn't turned around and gone, you know, no, I'm not going to take this. You know, we talked about race earlier, for example, if Rosa Parks hadn't said, actually, no, I'm not going to get off this fucking bus, would we have still had segregation? Would we have still had that man in it? Would it not have sparked things? You know, with Emily Pankhurst throwing herself in front of a horse, you know, would we have got the woman's vote? There are these people, but actually in sport, there's actually no need to kind of really to do that. And I, you know, the book was an opportunity to tell the stories, to have fun, but also have some serious moments, but without being like Alan Partridge in his fictional book, you know, bouncing back where every chapter finishes, needless to say, I had the last laugh, because I think that's a little bit funny.
I feel like it was a book that appeals to people that aren't into rugby as much. Like, I'm into rugby, but I wouldn't say I'm the most into rugby out of everyone. I feel like if you have no interest in the sport of rugby, there's still a great read to be had there, because like you said, it's kind of your not Alan Partridge style, but it's got your memoirs. And I feel like it's James Haskell, including some of the rugby bits as well. And every story that you talk about rugby, even when you talk about the progression of sort of your career or experiences of certain clubs, whether they be positive or negative, I feel like you kind of make sure that you open the door so that if you are someone who's ignorant to the world of rugby, you feel included and there's enough story in there for you to partake in it.
Look, there are plenty of better autobiographies that go into deep rugby depth. You know, I didn't want to create a book which was basically, you know, my mum took me to rugby when I was five. You know, I always wanted to be there. You know, during this game against South Africa, we were 10 minutes down and Johnny Wilkinson turned to me and he was like, that's been done. I didn't get into rugby to tell those stories. I got into about the personalities, the camaraderie, the stories, the scrapes, the achievements, the negatives, the highs and the lows. So the whole book is, I wanted this book to be popular with people who never watched the game of rugby. And that point was that, from chapter one, this is the thing I get from chapter one, people are messaging me like in hysterics. I can't stop laughing because, you know, I've had to condense down all the best bits and worst bits into a book. And I remember I did an interview with BBC Five Live and the female journalist, you know, her angle was, well, you know, I thought the drinking culture in rugby had changed. I thought you're professionals. When are you boys going to grow up? And my point to her was, listen, if I wrote a book about all the times that I stayed at home and had a protein shake and went to bed at 7 o'clock, it's not really going to sell, is it? You know, the whole point, the underlying story about everything in that book was, it took I had unbelievable dedication to my career. I went above and beyond to get the best out of myself. I struggled with criticism, self-doubt, you know, negativity. I was obsessive about lots of things. But do you know what? We did have a few crazy piss-ups, and this is what happened. This is what happened to this, and we made a few scandals, and this is where it went. And that's the nature of the book. And I work with a fantastic ghostwriter So my other three book or four books that I've written were all around health and fitness, which I wrote myself. You know, I wanted to have a ghostwriter guy called Ben Dears who captured my narrative voice really well. And he wrote it. And basically, you know, I then, when we got the final draft through, I sat down with Chloe and I said, look, read this. And she read it, as she always does, amazing. She was like, I said, does it sound like me? And she went, no, but it's an amazing book. And I was like, no. I don't want this, because some people get these sports books written and they never read them. I was like, no. I sat down for, you know, 12 3-hour interviews with this guy. So I went back and rewrote it because I loved the process. Out of all the books I did, I found this the most cathartic process. I enjoyed it. You know, I basically rewrote about 60,000 words, added about 30,000 words to the total by the time we got there, made sure that every fibre of that book was me in conjunction with Ben's kind of exquisite writing. It worked. It worked really well. So you suddenly had a book which was my voice, the way I told things, you know, even some of the crass bits where, you know, he probably wouldn't have put them in. I went with it. And the feedback's been phenomenal. You know, Sunday Times bestseller for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. You know, number 2 on the Saturday Times, you know, bestseller list. I think we've done about 80,000, maybe 90,000 copies so far. It's only been out 4 weeks. And it's, you know, but the also thing is the audiobook, the opportunity to read your own book and do the impressions, do the voices was brilliant. I'm just very proud. And I think it's actually changed people's perspective of me. You know, I've told you before when I've done that your great podcast that, you know, people sort of go, meh, you know, do you James Askell? I'm like, yeah. I used to think you're a wanker, but I've seen you on I'm a Celebrity and I really like you. And you're like, oh, okay, brilliant. But actually I'm getting people going, fucking hell, you know, I knew that you had a lot of criticism. I knew you went through this, but I didn't realize how bad. I didn't realize how bad you've been stitched up and let down. And, you know, people really enjoy it. And I think during a period of lockdown, I was able to bring some cheer because the predominant thing that I like to do is make people laugh. You know, I am the arch performer, you know, slash show off. And I'm able to give people that humor and they seem to really love it.
Yeah, man. Was there anything that when you wrote the book or when you had the interviews, was there anything in there that kind of didn't quite make it? Like, was there anything in there you're like, I can't do this?
There was... I mean, we had a barrister. So we had a barrister read, like a top barrister read over it twice. Because, you know, listen, we live in a litigious, litigious world now, mate. You know, mate. Everybody's like offended, change your mind. You know, I'm currently involved in two other legal battles I can't talk about, which are, you know, around stuff like this. So, you know, if I was going to come after people and give what I felt was a honest criticism. So I gave honest criticism on Stuart Lancaster and his regime when he was England coach, Martin Johnson, his regime. You know, I've got the utmost respect for these guys. They're both brilliant people, but I wanted to give my version, you know, and I wasn't critical for the sake of critical. And I wasn't personal, but if you're going to say the truth, you know, you need to make sure you're covered. So I had barrister read through it twice. I had a lot. My old agent was a lawyer. He read through it. And I got my current agent to read through it as well. And there was three things that I took out. There was a story about a time in Paris, which actually on reflection, when I read it, I was like, I don't think we can say this because, you know, that's. And then there was a couple of things where I referred to people as a snake and someone else said it, and they were like, look, you can't do that. So I changed those stuff. But everything else I'm happy with. And do you know what? Unless somebody's trying to gather a whole load of evidence to come against me, I've had no problems with it at all. There was a guy called Chris Ratu, who's a journalist in New Zealand, who hadn't read my book, who basically just criticised it on the extracts and basically slagged me off. But he is he's basically a gutter press sort of guy that says whatever he says. Snake. He basically said that basically the book was called What a Wanker, a Flanker, and he was a Wanker and everything else, but without reading the book. So, I mean, if you want to do a critique of a book, you don't read it, you know, you're always going to find that, you know, but anyway. Yeah.
Fair enough. Listen, mate, good to hear that it's doing good numbers and genuinely a good read. Like, if I thought it was all right, I probably wouldn't have said anything to you about it, but I did literally, I messaged you. I was like, mate, fuck, you know, class. I think I was like halfway through. I was like, yeah, this is a good read. It flows well.
Yeah. I mean, like we said, look, you know, you've got me on to talk about technology, you know, AirPod Pros and, you know, Beats and stuff. You give me an honest answer. There's no point giving a vanilla appraisal. And look, I know that, you know, you wouldn't have said anything if you didn't really like it. And I really appreciate it because it's important. You know, we've done stuff together, but you don't know me that well. And I think actually reading a book that, and seeing someone, you kind of understand a little bit more about where someone comes from and what they do. And also, you know, I'd like to think that people, when they write autobiographies, they sex everything up. They're like, you know, that's why I once interviewed Arsene Wenger, and I was talking to him, and in his book, he talked about his kind of creation of this genius football and stuff. And I said to him, you know, when you were doing all this stuff, did you have all this in your mind as the master plan, or did it happen by chance and you ultimately then gone, oh, that's what I was doing and this is why I was doing it? And he didn't necessarily answer the other question, but a lot of people, when they do these things, they go, well, this was a masterstroke and I always knew that if I'd done this, when in reality, they flipped a coin, they went with it, and 9 out of 10 coaches get fired, one stumbles on something and suddenly he develops a method, you know, and then you know, because I remember Pep Guardiola, you know, this ultimate footballer and Jurgen Klopp, you know, it probably took them a long time to identify. And now if you interviewed them, they would have a whole science behind what they do. And my book, I tried, hopefully, when you read it, to go, that sounds like him. That's what he's like. He's no different. He hasn't tried to make out that he's some sort of rugby genius, because I wasn't.
Yeah, you do. I mean, you put the spontaneity in it. You put in the moments of confusion where you've made right decisions, but you also put in moments where you made wrong decisions. I mean, there's a large part of the book where you're discussing, you know, wasps and kind of, you know, the ups and downs, you know, in various different ways, you know, not just stuff on the pitch, stuff, you know, that's just all management and kind of how that puts pressure across the team. And then you talk about moving, you know, clubs from one area to another and how the pressure you get from the fans, all of that information kind of takes out the whole kind of, oh yes, and then I decided to do that. And yeah, that's what I wanted to do all along. Cause yeah, you know, it's easy to do that. And I think what you also kind of cover, and it's an important thing as well, is that people that make right decisions are building on the back of a load of wrong decisions. So you can be a coach and see 20 or 30 or 40 different ways that have not worked. So you try the 41st time when you tweak it, and that could be the thing that makes it happen. You've not built that from scratch. You've used other people's mistakes to get to where you need to get to. So that was really interesting, man. So the What the Flanker podcast, is there anything to do with the book, or you just kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So series one behind the podcast was... Yeah. Themes I talked about in the book: leadership, resilience, social media, dealing with fame, the DJing element, my relationship with my wife, you know, my relationship with Eddie Jones. Every guest in that series is related to something in the book. So I've got Nick Fanciulli, the incredible house DJ.
Sick.
Talking to him about his, you know, my transition to music, why I did that, how important the DJing is, what DJing feels like and why it's a great... replacement for rugby. Roman, you know, talking to him about fame, but actually, you know, going from nothing to a celebrity show, to the madness of fans. To Chloe, you know, what's it like going out with a sportsman? Is it glitz and glamour? Is it this, you know? And then talking to James Smith about being outspoken. I'm outspoken. We caught controversy just by being ourselves. You know, Ross Edgley talking about resilience and my determination and actually what makes us tick and why we do it. So it's all kind of linked up. What I'd like to do is series two is following the same team, but by three or four, I'm interviewing people in completely different walks of life that I want to learn from. The whole idea of the podcast is very similar to Joe Rogan's concept that I want to talk to people I want to learn from and I want to interview them.
Who's like someone that's up there that you'd really like to talk to? Like, you know, no limits.
Well, apart from Marcus Bronzy, I think...
Season five, maybe. Let me know. I might be watching the air, five. But crack on.
I think someone like The Rock I would love to talk to. I think, you know, he's someone I'd really like to look at how, you know, the way he's mastered, you know, so many different careers, the constant ability to market himself in an incredible way, I think would be really interesting. Ricky Gervais, you know, his approach to comedy and his success, and you know, his late rise to success, I think would be super interesting. There's obviously some sports people as well that I would love to really kind of get into depth with. You know, Conor McGregor, I actually interviewed him once for BT Sport. You know, I love. Look, he has lots of faults, but his ability for a long time, and like Mayweather, to talk it up and actually deliver and have a personality, as opposed to be what all fans want, is, you know, they sort of want someone to talk themselves up but fail, or they want someone just to be super humble. Oh, look how humble he is. Well, humble don't sell tickets. Humble ain't interesting. You know what I mean?
100%. I mean, I think with what Conor McGregor did is he made UFC into a household name. He made it so that I could say to my mum or dad, oh, do you know UFC? Oh yeah, name a fighter. They wouldn't be able to name anyone other than Conor McGregor. I don't think now, with all due respect to the quality of fighters that there are out there. I don't think my mum could name another UFC fighter, but that's what he did. And when someone's got that in a sport where they can elevate it to the point where you're a household name, it's good for everyone. It pushes up everyone in the sport. Do you know what I mean? So for example, even yourself with like good, the bag and the rugby, people that might not be into the sport can absorb that podcast and be like, oh, do you know what? Cool. Like, all right, I get a bit of this rugby stuff now. That might lead to them watching a game, supporting a team. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it gives people that entry point. So it's so important to have those figures in sports and stuff. So yeah, it's interesting. All right, cool. Well, I'm gonna listen to a few episodes of that pod, man. It sounds really, really cool.
I promise you, out of all the things I've ever done, the feedback from the What a Flanker, the podcast, has been, like the book, just very unique, very different. And people are really resonating with it because it's me in a completely different light. I'm interviewing and I'm trying to, you know, trying to get this stuff from these guys. And actually, every guest has been unique and different, and hopefully people enjoy it. I mean, you know, I went to number two in all categories in podcasts in the world. It's you know, we're doing some big numbers, and I think it's something that's going to build. You know, it's I just want people to find it interesting, and like me, I'm discovering as I'm going, and that's what I wanted to do.
Nice one, mate.
Look. There he is.
Can you hello? See
him? He's shattered. He's absolutely knackered. I took him for a 5K walk today, and my mate Dylan Hartley's got a beautiful Rhodesian Ridgeback, and he doesn't really play with. We haven't got many dogs around this, and he spent an hour and a half playing with this Ridgeback. Like, they got on like a house on fire, and he's now so tired. He never gets into his own cage because he wants to stay out. It's twice he's taken himself off there to have a lie down. He is bollocks. That's so funny. And look, my wife just sits lovingly at the door looking at him.
And she's just there cooing at him, like, oh.
Cooing at him, cooing. She's just like that, going, there's my sweetheart. He's had such a big day.
Definitely ginger, though. Thanks, though. It's definitely a ginger.
Yeah, definitely ginger.
Right. So, speaking about pogs, from What a Flanker to your own pod that you got with a missus, man. So, can we talk a bit about that?
Yeah, couples quarantine. So, you know, basically my wife was kind of, you know, she's extremely intelligent, extremely talented, and is kind of, I lower the tone in all the respects of stuff she does. You know, she's sort of a best-selling author, you know, training 800 people online. And I was like, in last lockdown, I was like, look, Chloe, I love working with you. I want to do a podcast with you. And we talked about what it was about, and we get talked about as being couple goals because we put stuff on social media, we take the piss out of each other, we have this, and in reality we're not couple goals. We fight like cats and dogs, like everybody does. We have our problems, but we wanted to create a podcast where we felt couples, we could talk about these issues that couples face that they don't really talk about, that they pretend, you know, there's a large section of society pretending that people don't go to the bathroom and pretending they don't have sex. And, you know, we talked about that. You know, what the second show we did was, what happens when you first start dating someone, you need to go to the bathroom? Like, what do you do? Like, there's lads around the country laying awake, you know, trying not to squeeze out a fart and panicking and having to go to a pub in the morning. And, you know, women as well. You know, I said that women had it easier. My wife was like, no, because the expectation is that men are gross. Women, you know, it's not supposed to do that. So we sort of started with a bang. And look, you know, we've had about 5 or 6 Daily Mail kind of headlines on there. But we're not intentionally, we're just being very honest and open. And we're getting, you know, I would say I'm getting 5 emails a day from listeners, all asking us questions about, you know, problems they face with their partners, dating stuff, and everything else. And we debate it, and we're getting guests on. We had Russell Kane on yesterday. We had Jack Whitehall, Matt Richardson. You know, we had our first kind of gay guy called Sam Dowler talking about the different, you know, my brother's gay, and I sort of, you know a bit about that dating world, but I wanted to see, do the same things apply? Because we talked about when, you know, and this is wrong. This is what we discovered, actually, wrongly. The perception is that men have a higher sex drive than women, but actually that's not the case. But obviously women control the keys to the sex, right? So I asked Sam, you know, what happens when you've got two men and there's no control? What happens? And he was saying, and he said, you know, it literally is like, hi, want to fuck? Like, yeah. And it's like, that's how quickly it happens. And we were sort of discussing those bits and pieces. And it's been really informative. We've yet to get a sponsor, funnily enough. We've had a few inquiries like, hello Fresh. We're like, yeah, we'd love to sponsor the show. And then they listen to an episode like, Yeah, we probably need to be too controversial. So we're trying to get someone like Durex or like Trojan or you know, Ann Summers or something sex related. You know, even KY Jelly would be great. You know, some of those, something like that to sponsor us.
Yeah, man, something like that to lubricate the bank accounts, should we say?
Well, exactly, both ways, yeah.
All right, man, yeah, that sounds class. I mean, when you say Daily Mail headlines, are they just kind of doing the usual Daily Mail job where they're kind of freaking a couple of things that you say are a bit edgy and kind of, you know?
Yes, so basically, I'll give you an example. My wife, has become an agony aunt for The Sun, a bit like Dear Deirdre, but, you know, for Fabulous magazine, which is, and she really loves it. Her father is Richard Imadley, who is for The Telegraph, the agony aunt for The Telegraph. They're both very compassionate people and have great advice. And actually, bizarrely, all of our friends think I'm amazing on this podcast and give great advice. And Chloe has to keep going, yeah, he does give great advice, but he doesn't fucking follow it himself. So I'm definitely do as I say, not as I do. But yeah. Chloe writes for the Fabulous magazine. And basically what happened is I did an interview for The Sun for my first, for my book when it came out. And the lady from The Sun had got hold of an early transcript of her thing and wasn't supposed to have done this. And basically asked us a story. And Chloe had joked about, you know, what, you know, men freak out about women having slept with loads of people beforehand, yet men go around drilling loads of people and thinking it, you know, and then, you know, men are like, oh, well, I can't have my missus sleep with a couple of people. You're like, you slept with 500. Like, what? Yeah. How have you thought that's bad? But that's hypocrisy. That's another story. So she joked in this article and went, yeah, well, James, you know, James has probably slept with 1,000 birds that we know about. Boom. Sun headline. Haskell sleeps with 1,000 women, you know, this kind of stuff. And they roll with it. So much so that we've obviously joked about it on the podcast. And Chloe said, yeah, but look, James is always trying to have sex with me at inappropriate times. Like when I'm cooking, I was cooking prawn pilpil, which is obviously with hot oil. And so James is trying to have sex with me. And, you know, it's very dangerous. So I made a joke about, you know, burning my knob off. Haskell likes freaky sex in dangerous kitchen shag or something like that. And it's like, no, that's not what happened. I mean, the fact is I did try and have sex with her while she was making prawn pilpil, but not near the hob and not with my knob out. I said to her, listen, do you want to come and do a few bits? And she was like, no, I'm cooking, you know, have a minute.
Yeah. Fucking hell, timing, James. Fucking hell, those prawns are going to get fucked up. That's what
she says. She says the same thing. She's like, timing. She's like, you've had all day and you wait for me to pounce on me when I'm trying to cook your dinner.
I tell you when I don't feel sexy, when I'm slaving over a hot stove, I don't feel like, whoa.
Wait, yeah, I think that's very well. I've never thought what she's thinking. I've never thought that she's going, do you know what? I'm slaving over a hot stove, but the last thing I want is some big Neanderthal to fucking try it on in the kitchen.
Yeah. I'm going to fuck these prawns up if I'm not careful. Fucking hell. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, mate. Exactly. Yeah, well, look, mate, you've been smashing out the content, but have you been getting some R&R in as well? I mean, look, the next-gen consoles have dropped. I'm sure you've heard about them. Have you had a dabble yet, or what's happening?
No. So I'm obviously an Xbox. Well, I've accidentally put myself in the Xbox boat for years, right? But by Xbox, I have an Xbox. I like an Xbox. I've nobody from PlayStation, so I've not got any of the new stuff. I've got an Xbox One, and during the first lockdown, I played Red Dead Redemption 2, which I never played. And every time Chloe came in, all I was beating and robbing people, because that's all I did. Like every 5 minutes, stop, kill someone, rob them, hide a body. And she's like, what is wrong with you? And like, I'd meet a woman, he'd like, punch the woman. She goes, you can't do that. I said, yeah, you can in a video game. And she's like, there's something wrong with you. So I just spent all the time doing that. But I realized I wasn't getting anything done. I've just got Call of Duty Cold War.
Yeah.
But the problem with the new things is, you know, update with 50 gigabyte update. And I'm like, unless you've got 100 meg broadband, like I've had the game for 3 days and I've been unable to play it because it hasn't updated. And I'm like, what the fuck happened to just playing off a CD?
Look, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I love Call of Duty, right? But something needs to be done with the game size. Like there are enormous, and it's not just, I can't just put it on COD because that's not fair, but
it's not, it's everything.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, next gen consoles that I got are full up, right? Already. And that's a terabyte each, pretty much, and give or take a few 100 gig, yeah. So something we need to have a big discussion. Either they need to sort us out with massive storage at a reasonable price. Don't think that's gonna happen soon, or they need to work on optimizing game size because it's too much at the moment. I get it. We need more quality. We want games to look better, look slicker, but there needs to be a way of optimizing. And I don't know, would you be up for getting a few discs like they used to do with Final Fantasy? You get like three or four discs. Are you up for that?
Look, I'll be honest with you. I'm not your archetypal gamer, right? Yeah. I've told you this before. I love technology. I'm a technology whore, right? I've just got myself the new Pioneer CDJ 3000s. I've got a Pioneer V10 mixer. I look at cameras. I've gone on and put the Mavic Pro 2 in my shopping basket 7 times and taken it back out again because I know that I want someone to use it to film me while I'm doing stuff, not me filming myself. So I don't do it.
Yeah.
I've obviously with the podcasting, I've got, you know, the new GoPro Hero 9. They've said I work with them. They sent that to me. I've just got the new media mods. But when it comes to gaming, I sat down the other day and I was like, do you know what? I haven't done any video gaming for a while. I didn't realize the new Call of Duty app. I've ordered it. I want to be able to put the game in the machine and play the game. 3 days, I haven't been able to play this. I don't care about the size of content. I want content, but you know, until this UK gets actual legit decent internet everywhere, and bear in mind, I do live in, well, it looks like a bandstand or some sort of blind shop in Northamptonshire. But you know, my internet is not good enough to do that, and it's 50 gigabyte update to play that one game, and I still can't play it. So yeah. I haven't looked at the new consoles as to what's going on, but I don't understand. I would have happily have 4 discs. Just let me play the game. That's what I want. I want to, you know.
I was going to say, look, he just wants to play, and I get it. We all want to, man. But you're gone.
Have you tried the new Xbox and PlayStation?
Yeah, man. Look, in terms of the consoles, they both kick ass, right? But here's where the war is at, right? So obviously the war is first games, like where are the best games? So there's some exclusives that are on PlayStation that are really good. I'll get back to PlayStation in a second. And Xbox have basically bought Bethesda, which is a massive computer games production company. So they're going to have the power, if they wish in the future, to have loads of Xbox exclusive games, right? But the thing that people have been speaking about, probably more recently this week, because the PlayStation's dropped this week that's just gone, is the control pad on the PS5. I don't know if you've seen anything about it online, but long story short, it's really got a lot of features in it. So it's got HD rumble, like a rumble in it that feels more unique. But the main thing for it is, you know, the triggers when you pull it, like all those, they're haptic. So you can actually feel like for a shotgun, it's a thicker, harder trigger or for a lighter weapon. And mate, that, there's a little game that comes free with the PS5 called Astro's World, right? Astrobot. And you literally are there just looking at the control pad, being amazed. And I think if they truly manage to harness that when you're playing games, like when you feel like you're pulling a trigger on a bigger gun, it's a harder pull. Or when you pick up something, or something happens in the game that the rumble feels right. You know, it's just way more immersive, man. Way more immersive. And the control pad, I thought it felt all right. And then I picked up my PS4 control pad. I was like, nah, the PS5 control pad feels better.
Really?
Yeah. With that being said, Xbox, because it's not something that's like, because the units, they're there to stay. Xbox could come with a better control pad, and, you know, that could be their next thing. And, you know, we could be looking at upgraded control pads over the next year or so till we see the next gen of console. So yeah, control pads is for PS5, that could be winning it for them. And they've also got some great exclusives as well. They've got Spider-Man, which is just, bruv, it's just, you're just playing Spider-Man. It's awesome. Like, yeah, go on.
Because the seminal game for me is Grand Theft Auto. You know, like the Red Redemption stuff. The free world. Look, I never World of Warcraft. I never those things. But the concept of giant maps where you could spend, you know, you could spend 6 months and you still haven't done everything.
Yeah.
I love that. You know, I can't wait till the new Grand Theft Auto comes out. You know, but it takes 5 years to build them. You know, and the problem is we are a consumer. A content hungry nation, and everybody wants it out now. Like I don't know. I'll be interested to see it. I know people like FIFA. I just don't really play sports games. I just like shooting stuff, shooting, robbing and killing, if that's okay. But I actually talk about Sony. They're obviously new mirrorless cameras are incredible.
Yeah.
So I've been trying. You know, I've been with Canon. I do a lot of stuff. I got a Canon M50 for kind of the main shot, and I use the 2 GoPro Hero 9s for the 2 shots. But the new Sony stuff is good. So I may leave the Xbox path and go, you know, PS5, and so you get the Sony AC something or whatever it is, the cameras, because they apparently are the absolute nuts.
Yeah, man. Well, listen, in terms of the console wars, I think it's still in the air. Well, I think you. if I don't know, I think if you hang back and wait and see for the next month or so, if you can, you might be able to see which ones win it. But I know that there's a lot of people talking about PS this week. But you also mentioned cameras as well. You said the GoPro Hero 9 you've been playing with too, yes. Right? So yeah, talk us through that.
So the GoPro Hero 9, I've been working with GoPro for the last 4 years officially, but I had the very first GoPro, and I've had every iteration up since then. The Hero 9 5K, they've got obviously Time Warp 3.0. They've got their sort of, I think it's 12 million megapixel or maybe more camera shots. They've got this mod pack. So one of the things that was criticized about GoPro before was sound. That sound. So they've created these media mods. When they came out, due to issues with production and everything else, they never released them. They advertised them, but because of issues, they couldn't ever have them. So basically, with the new Hero 9, you've got a mod pack, you've got a light on there, got a new stand, better shotgun mic. The stabilization is insane. So you no longer need a gimbal. Even if you're walking, riding, cycling, you never see anything. It's got digital stabilization, which is incredible. And all of it makes a massive, massive difference. And I love them, and in terms of, they've still got 1080p, 25 frames, they've got 30 frames, they've got 250 frames, they've got amazing slow motion. And it makes a massive difference.
You should strap one on the dog and send it off for a run.
I did it yesterday. They've got a thing called a, what is the hell's the name of their harness? But I used to have it with my old dog. The problem is that this one's too small. So when it ran, it just swiveled down. It was like, your first day of school. Where the kid, Well, it's just the first, your first day of school where they put you in oversized clothes. Your mum can go into it and you start tripping up on the shirt sleeves. Yeah. You see these kids. It was too big for him. But it's called, it is a dog harness. And basically you can put it on the chest or sit it on the back. I sit it on the back, and it, you see it like running towards you, like it wobbles. So I've had that. But man, I love the versatility of GoPro. I know people talk about iPhones and the fact that, why would you have a separate camera where you've got instant digestible content on here? But the fact is, the GoPros for me, the quality that they can now film at, the fact they can act straight as a webcam, you can live stream directly from them, but also, it's the attachments. It's the fact that you do not want to strap this to your dog. You do not want to put this onto your side of your car. You do not want to take this up, underwater, is what sets them apart for me. And all my lifestyle stuff, they work really nicely. So the Hero 9 is by far and away the best kind of sports active camera. And now with these media mods, it's become a really, really quality, reputable blogging tool. Because, everyone you see sort of your Casey Neistats, with the things on stuff here, you've got the GoPro mod, it's in your hand, super simple, POV other ways of looking at it are amazing.
Nice. I think that's the key. I think the next step with kind of cameras and stuff is to make sure that we have that high end, like you just picked up a digital SLR, that we can have that kind of level of quality, but in something that's much more portable. And do you know what? You got me thinking, we might be getting our hands on some 360-degree cameras soon. It'd be great for you to strap one of those on the dog and send it running around. That would look mental.
Yeah. I mean, I had the GoPro Fusion, the 360, and I used it. I had the Fusion, and then I had the GoPro Max, which I basically used in Tokyo in Japan. So if any of your listeners want to have a look at them, go through my Instagram. Some incredible at the Shibuya Crossing in Japan with a 360. And again, incredible blogging tool. The fact that, you could have it 360 or you could switch it to how you wanted it was amazing. And the GoPro Max is an unbelievable bit of kit.
Decent, man. Decent. And you upgraded your DJ kit, I hear, then.
Pardon?
You upgraded your DJ kit, then, the Pioneer kit you just told us.
Yes,
about.
Yeah. I basically, I've been working with Pioneer for a little while. I really Denon, I think, are kind of new pretenders to the throne. I think they're doing some amazing stuff. And they've actually, because of the uniqueness and the way that, that they sort of stormed in with some equipment that just had never been seen before. And actually, I got, this is wasn't prep, but there's something called the Denon Prime Go, which is a portable system, which is basically a full professional setup which you can take on the go. So when I go on tours or traveling with Chloe, you don't have a full setup, but you want all the actual club functions, not on a small shitty controller. You want something you actually, you know, you could put a set together on this and then go straight into a club and do it. I got myself that the other day. But the Pioneer stuff, they just launched the new CDJ 3000s, which have been, I think, maybe 5-6 years or maybe 10 years in making. I'm not exactly sure the date of them, but they are incredible. Bigger screens, much more impactful, certain like amazing features like key syncing. So, you know, normally, you know, if you've got tracks that don't, that clash with keys, you can hear it, sounds bad. You can now do that on the fly. You know, you can now listen to and prep tracks. So if you've got two tracks playing, you could never listen to that, you know, where that track went. But if you, with one of the mixers, you can put your finger ahead and go, oh Christ, this song suddenly goes into a horrible vocal. This is going to clash. Bigger job wheels. And then they've got the new V10 mixer they call the Beast, which is a 6-channel mixer, which is so good for kind of music creation. So, you know, you're suddenly got 6 channels to work with, but you can also affect a separate channel. So for example, if I having 2 tracks playing and I want to add an echo to one of the tracks, it will send that echo to another channel, which you can then re-affect. So it's kind of like these multi-layered abilities, the fact you can then plug in third-party equipment to it. But it's just, you've got a 4-channel EQ on it as well for getting that sort of systematic and kind of really smooth mixing. So I kind of, yeah, I've been doing some work with it. And the 3000s I've had, I sort of still work with my DJ teacher, who's also a producer that I've actually got my first track coming out next year that's been signed on a record label, which is quite cool. We put together in lockdown. And so we had him around yesterday. He hadn't seen the new 3000s. And we just had a jam and we used the DGS 1000 sampler. So yeah, we're basically making a track as we're going along. So we put a new kick in, cut claps and hats as we're mixing songs. We're just having a rave up, mate. It's great fun.
Sick, man. That sounds really good. And I think with Pioneer, one thing that they are good at is that they have really powerful products, but they're very easy to kind of use. I feel like when you know one Pioneer turntable, you can get onto a next one and kind of understand it. And don't get me wrong, I love them and products and they're great, but I feel like they take a lot. There's a bigger learning curve for you to kind of understand how to work with them, because there's a lot going on in terms of the button.
Yeah, it's a difference between an industry standard and something else. You know, what's actually interesting about Denon is, because the excuse people give you is, if you walk into a club, 9 times out of 10, they're going to have a Pioneer setup.
Yeah.
And they did a really clever campaign called Change Your Rider, Denon. And because they're computer, I mean, I think before the 3000s, you know, they're 6000s, the Denon 6000s, I'm not sure what the model number is, were, you know, light years ahead. They connect to the internet. You could download music straight to them. They had 2 layers. So all you needed was 2 decks and you had 4 decks built into them. They had all these kind of incredible features that were, it was a bit like, I'll give you an example, you know, the Android and iPhone battle.
100%.
So basically iPhone will come out with facial recognition, all this stuff. And then you get the Androids people going, yeah, we've had that for like 6 years. Like, what are you talking about? But the point is that no one cares you had it for 6 years because it's wrapped up in an Apple product and you know that's what you're going to get. It's a bit like what's happened with the Denon thing, is that Denon have created a superior product in those 6000s, have pushed the market, have you know, changed the way people are looking at DJing with control pads and the multi-layering of decks and everything else, and new effects, which has then pushed Pioneer to develop and have a new product. But what Denon did quite cleverly was that people were using the excuse, well, you know, they're not in a club, but they then set up a whole set of retailers, for example, around the UK and lenders. So actually, if you want them on your rider, they will get them put in. But I just love Pioneer. There's some great guys at the Pioneer team that I've spent time with, and they sit and we do Zoom calls over utilizing the equipment. Because I'm a Technokino, there's no point having, you know, a 6-channel mixer if you're going to use 1 channel, you don't know how to use it. You know, there's no point having, the new 3000 if you're not going to use all the features. And, you know, the beauty of it is that with the 3000, they've kept the bottom half uniform. So even if you've never used them before, you walk into a club, it's a familiar look and feel.
Yeah.
But then what they've done is that they've then gone and looked at different workflow changes. They've removed buttons that people don't use, but they've kept features in there. And they've actually made them computers now. So with firmware updates, you could suddenly start having a unique update, which is essentially what they do with the iPhones, you know, where they say, by the way, look, with these features aren't quite here, but we're going to go nuclear. And the chip we've got in, you know, could land a space shuttle, but we're probably only using 10% of it. But we're going to send you a, we'll send you a thing. But by the way, just before you actually be able to use it, the battery's going to die because we couldn't work that part out. So you're going to have to get an upgrade anyway. So we won't talk about it.
We've made the battery bigger, so it'd be great on your current screen size, but the screen's now twice the size. So yeah, it's going to rinse the battery.
What? And if you do this new update, it'll be great because it'll use the new chip, but the battery isn't too powerful enough to use the chip. So we're going to have to do another one. And you're like, hold on a minute. Surely can't we just have everything that you wanted to put in the thing at the time that all works? You know, yeah. But that's the beauty of technology, is it? But also remember, they made that company years ago made that everlasting light bulb. Do you remember there is that thing? You remember that they made the everlasting light bulb. They came up with like, this is a light bulb. And then someone turned around and went, that's fucking great, pal. But people are going to buy one light bulb and never buy anything again.
Yeah, so exactly.
Now we build shit to break because you need to keep a consumer market, because there is no point having a car that's going to last forever because you'll never buy a new car. And people forget that. Like, oh, I think build quality's gone down. It's like, no, shit's going to break now all the time. Batteries are going to run down over a period of time because they probably could. You know, they reckon they've had sustainable energy about 20 years, you know, hydrogen fusion, all this kind of stuff. They've done it, but they're like, fuck that. We're making way out of oil and everything else. Let's go through all the other stuff, hydro, solar, sell the shit out of that. And then one day we'll come up with a perfect solution.
100%. I think about it. If you have enough solar panels, right? I don't know how many that is. That surely is enough to supply whatever your electrical need is, but no one's done the maths or no one's sharing the maths, right? Well, you know what, James, you need... All right, it's going to cost you a lot, but you need like 500 solar panels, but you never have to pay an electricity bill again. No one's talking to me in that kind of plain English. Do you know what I mean? That's how I want someone to explain it to me. You live in a 2-bedroom flat, you use this much electricity. Yeah, you probably need that many panels or a wind or a windmill or something like that. But, you know, who knows? I've seen quite a few solar panel farms up and about recently. Apparently you can make a decent bit of cash off it as well if you put yourself in the right place. I've not got that kind of land though.
I don't have that kind of land either. I think it's interesting as well because people get in on the old biomass. I've got a mate got a biomass thing put in. And again, you know, you have to be so spot on with this stuff. You know, what are you burning? What is the wood chip thing? Who are actually making the money? And look, ultimately, we want to save the environment. And that's the most important thing, because we're only getting one planet and we are buggered it. And I don't think it is possible to turn back time or turn back the tables. But I think we should have a good go at it. Like, I've become obsessive about recycling, actually, and I wish someone would invent some super, super good way of sorting it all out.
Well, when you say obsessive, what are you doing? Are you peeling like the paper off your tins and making sure that's separate from them as well? Or what?
Oh no! Well, let's go steady. I mean, I'm not. What I'm saying is, I'm washing out the tins.
That's good.
And I'm recycling everything that I can recycle.
But
the cycling conundrum that upsets me is I put it in the separate bins, and now we've gone, okay, now they've gone from separate, the red and blue bins, they've now just gone to a big wheelie bin, right? So that's fine. But then they just fuck the wheelie bin in the back of the truck with everything else, and you're like, what? I don't understand. And the thing is, I think you'll find, like, a bit like, you know, the horse meat scandal in the supermarkets.
Yeah.
There's about to be the biggest scandal. I mean, I know there's not really important in comparison to COVID, where they're going to find they're just fucking this all in a truck and stuffing it in a lab. And there's actually no need to sort it out. Doesn't matter what color bin you do it. It's just making people feel like they're doing something. But there's Terry down the scrap, you know, down the landfill. He's just plowing it into a field.
Chuck it in. There you go.
Yeah, chuck it in and fuck it. Yeah. Oh, it's got, you know, like, and then that's my concern. And I, because it got me thinking. And I started following David Attenborough, like most people did on Instagram, because A, he's one of the biggest legends that's ever lived, and B, you can't get enough of that voice. And the fact he talks about the planet, and then you look at the amount of packaging and consumables we have. And I had to get two of these giant recycling wheelie bins just for the volume of kind of, and imagine, you know, being a technology podcast and review thing, the amount of stuff you're getting sent,
boxes.
The amount of stuff, boxes and boxes and boxes. Mate, you can't open a dinner without having, you know, 12 kilos of packaging. Well, I just, you know, what happened to glass, you know, with plastic bottles? Like, I don't, you know, I know people dropping shit, but I'd rather have glass. But then people say paper bags, and we've got to cut down trees, but then why can't we replant them? I mean, we've made life so difficult for ourselves.
Yeah, do you know what though? I'm waiting for somebody to start complaining about masks, because I don't know wear my disc, because I've got like masks that I reuse, but I've also got a few disposable ones in case I get caught short. And I realize that I don't know how that's made. I don't know what's in it. I'm seeing them like on the floor, litter everywhere, because I think people are like dropping their masks and going, fuck it, I don't want to pick it up because, you know, COVID, innit? Might catch some COVID on the floor. How much like plastic and shit is being used on masks that isn't like, you know, recyclable? I'm curious. I'm waiting for that scandal to drop. Obviously, at the moment, what's important is making sure that you stay safe. But, you know.
Mate, masks are going to be killer. Those medical masks are, I'll be honest with you, that is the next thing. I can't wait to see a seal choking on one of them and the top of the sea covered in masks, because it's going to happen. Like, yeah, the volume, man, of stuff we're getting through. You know, and also the thing with the masks is, again, we talked at the top of the show. I mean, actually, I saw a report the other day, research done, that they actually don't do anything. That's the bizarre thing, the science. They said that they do not protect the wearer in any way against COVID and that it's actually not there. The problem is that, you know, was that a news article? Was that, you know, it was a news article. Was it bullshit? Was it research? I don't know. It's better just to make sure that we're trying to protect people and do what you think people are doing. So I'm not wearing a mask. I'm doing as I'm told. But then the other thing with those masks is the medical ones, they only last, I think, for 4 hours, and then you have to change them. And I swear, there's people coming to the door with fucking frayed masks, last night's dinner on it. And you're like, bud, you're actually, I would have thought, due to respiration and the amount of bacteria that's in your mouth and nose and everything else, your stomach, that would then sit in a mask, probably more likely give you more problems. If you think about the science behind it, if you don't clean them and change them, you know, and in a mask, you're breathing stuff in through the mask, so it's sticking to it. Mate, I think it probably make you more ill. But again, I don't know. But I know you do have to change them. That is recommended by the actual makers.
Yeah, wash your masks, man. You wouldn't wear your socksy underpants for a week. Well, not after university, at least. All right, if you're at university, you're disgusting. But you know, I've seen it happen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. University students just do whatever they can.
Yeah.
Kind of given.
I've been hearing the stories about these poor fuckers being held up in their halls as well, and them like trying to break out. Poor guys, man.
Why send them back to? Why send them back to uni? And also, I think university's dead. Why would you pay 10 grand a year to go to university when you can sit at home and do the course on your own? Just pay half the price.
Yeah, or just move over near a uni, get a little part time job. You can take part in all of the £1 Wednesdays and all those kind of student nights out. Learn by yourself and have a good time. Anyway, James, before we start putting the rest of the world to rights, thank you very much for joining us here on How to Kill an Hour. Should we send everyone over to your Instagram? Is that where we should be checking you? Is that where you're putting up content right now?
Do you know what? I'm absolutely smashing YouTube at the moment.
Okay.
So I've got YouTube under channel. It's under the James Haskell. I basically lost the logins for James Haskell, and now it's the James Haskell. I've had it for like 10 years. Just search James Haskell. You'll find my channel there. And my Instagram, at James Haskell, which has got basically all my daily content. Those are kind of the ones I filter. I go on Twitter, but Twitter's full of trolls and really angry middle-aged white people, and I just don't really like it.
You know, yeah, you know what? Yeah, let's not even get started on that. Honestly, yeah, make sure you check out What Flanker as well, mate, because that is our mate class book. Thank you for that as well, man. And yeah, we'll make sure we put links to all of your content in the show description. There's plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Thank you for killing some time with us.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.